For pretty much all of the 44 years that I've been on this earth, I've never really lived by the truth that you just heard from Ecclesiastes 3, verses 1 through 8. The truth being that there is a time for everything. I, for most of my life, have lived by an assumption that I would have never put this starkly, but I believe it to be true, and that is that the way to do life is to try to manage everything in such a way so that you can maintain status quo. And the better you get at life management, the more you'll have times of success and the less you'll have times of failure. But in between the increasing amounts of success and the decreasing amounts of failure, you want to try to just maintain status quo. And that comes from good life management, making good decisions, being on top of your game, those kinds of things. And Ecclesiastes 3 tells us something different. It says that life comes to us in seasons. And you can't manage when seasons begin and when they end. They just do. And you can either go along with them or fight against them, but you can't manage whether they start and whether they end. And in the physical world, this is obvious. It's so obvious it doesn't even need to be stated. We all know that in the physical world that the earth moves in certain rhythms of seasons. There's winter, spring, summer, fall. There's planting, growing, harvesting, and dormancy or pruning. We know it happens that way in the physical world. But Ecclesiastes says life doesn't just happen that way in the physical world. In other words, there are not just seasons of climate and temperature. There are also seasons of the heart, seasons of the soul. And this is a truth that our brains may not know, but our hearts do. That our hearts move in certain rhythms. At certain times, our hearts operate with a sense of life and vibrancy and expectancy, kind of like spring. There are other times where our heart operates just with a steady sense of growth and enjoyment and almost ease. Things just happen, kind of like in summer. There are other times in life where it just seems like there's production and there's efficiency and there's fruit, like in a harvest. And then there are other times where things just seem dead and there's nothing happening and nothing you can do can make anything happen, just like in winter. Our hearts know this because that's how our hearts operate. And so the truth about life is that there are spiritual seasons just as there are physical seasons. Now, we may not want it to be this way. I think all of us wish that the summers of life would last forever. There would always just be a time of growth and ease and things just almost magically happening. Wouldn't it be nice if life just was that way all the time? And of course, nobody ever wants the winters of the heart where it's dead and dormant and nothing's happening. But growing up and becoming a mature person means not trying to change the world so that it adapts to the way you want it to be, but changing yourself so that you adapt to the way things are. Adjusting yourself to reality. And the reality is that there are seasons of the heart, there are seasons of the soul, and these seasons come and they go. And so what we need is a spirituality or a theology that corresponds with the seasons. I mean, I know how to adjust my life to the physical seasons. I know that during the summer I cut my lawn. I know that during the fall I rake the leaves. I know that during the winter time I don't really do much outside at all, maybe do a little pruning. And I know that in the spring it's time to plant and to water and to prepare for life. But I'm not so good about doing that with my heart. I don't know how to adjust my spiritual practices to the spiritual seasons of my heart. How do I adjust prayer? How do I adjust times of Bible reading? How do I adjust solitude? How do I adjust listening and waiting on God? How do I adjust being active to what's going on in the seasons of my heart? And of all the seasons of the heart, the one I particularly don't know what to do with is winter. You know, winter is dark, it's cold, it's bleak. There's a lot more darkness than there is light. It feels like nothing's happening. And I don't like that. And when the winter of the soul comes, because of my mentality, which says that life is about how well I manage it and how well I'm able to maintain status quo and create successes and avoid failures, when winter comes, it must be because I've failed. I've done something wrong to create the winter of my soul. So I've got to fix it. What sin is causing this? What lack of discipline is creating this time in my life? I've got to fix that. I've got to manage it back into the status quo or back into success. And I've been through several winters of the soul, not all to the same degree, but they were all dark and they're all lonely. And every time I try to figure out what can I do to get out of this as soon as possible. Because, you know, I don't want to stay in the winter. And there's a whole lot that I don't know, but here's what I do know. It's really not very smart to plant corn in July. And it's not real smart to try to plant transplant shrubs in the winter. And that's also true regarding my heart. It's foolish to think that I'm constantly going to feel like I'm spiritually growing and God is close to me and I can feel his presence all the time. That's actually foolish to assume that it'll be that way. And so if that's my assumption, I've got to change that. I've got to adapt to the way things really are, not the way I want them to be. If it's really true that my heart goes through seasons, then I have to expect that there are going to be times of planting, times where there's new information that I'm taking in, that there are seeds of truth that are coming into my life. And that I take those in during those times. I also have to expect that there's going to be times of growth where it really does feel like God is very, very close and it feels like things are just happening almost effortlessly. It also means that there's going to be times in my life where there's harvest, where I'm just going to see tangible results, fruit. And it also means that there's going to be times in my life where no matter what I do, there's just going to be dormancy. And about all I can do is wait and maybe do a little pruning. But other than that, that's just the way it is. Now, I want to ask you a question. what is the sign, what is the indicator that your faith is growing and developing and maturing? What's the sign of that? There's an unstated assumption, and probably we wouldn't state it this starkly, but I'm going to go ahead and say it in very, very straightforward terms, that in our culture, which means it's just kind of the air we breathe and it's just kind of the way we assume things are, we tend to associate spiritual maturity with religious activity. In other words, the more you do for God, the more you're growing in faith. The more religious activity that's going on in your life, the closer you're getting to God, and the more holier you are becoming. It's just kind of an unstated assumption that's just there below the surface. That the more events that you attend, the more church committees you sit on, the more seminars you participate in, the more ministries that you support with your time and with your money, that's an indicator that you're becoming more mature and more alive in Jesus. But you know, as I look around, I've noticed that there's a correlation. It's not a perfect correlation, but I've noticed that at times there's a correlation between high levels of spiritual activity and emptiness. How is it that someone can become increasingly active for God and increasingly empty at the same time? In fact, I've noticed that sometimes religious activity can be a way of avoiding God, of keeping him at arm's length, of not having to deal with something that I don't want to deal with. I'll just stay busy for God. After all, if I'm doing religious things, it's a really easy way to fool other people and even myself about what's really going on in my heart. In fact, sometimes ministry even pulls us away from God. Sometimes increasing amounts of ministry makes us increasingly cranky and tired and whiny and less like Jesus. So let me ask you this. What is the Bible's measure of spiritual maturity? The Bible's measure of spiritual maturity is fruit. Fruitfulness. Not busyness, but fruitfulness. Galatians 5, verses 22 and 23 says, "The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, self-control. Against these there is no law." And nowhere in that list do you find spiritual busyness as a fruit of the Spirit. Jesus said, "You will know them by their high level of activity." No. You'll know them by their fruits. And if fruits is the sign of maturity, then it makes sense that we need to think in terms of the seasons of life that grow the fruit. That in order for fruit to be healthy, we have to go through all four seasons. You can't skip a season in order for a tree to be healthy and to grow good fruit. Every season has a purpose, even if we don't like it. Especially if growing good fruit means that we have to wait or be pruned. And so I go back to this truth that all of life flows in a series of rhythms, seasons. This is true in your relationships. You know, if you're married, think about your marriage. It operates in seasons. I mean, sometimes things are great and it's dynamic and it's growing and it's almost like it's operating on autopilot. And it's like, good, it's going to stay like this for the rest of our marriage. And obviously it doesn't. Why? Because you go through seasons. Sometimes the marriage is cold and dark and dormant. It's not dead, that's right. It just feels like it. So it happens in organizations. It happens in with groups of people. You know, there's an assumption. You look at it in the business world that a company needs to produce, it needs to grow at 10, 20, 30% every single year. And there's incredible pressure on business leaders and managers to just create this incredible growth year after year after year. And it's based on a fallacy that you can manage that, that organizations don't go through different seasons, that it's always summertime. I've been here 11 years at Sunnyside, and as I look back over 11 years, I can see four different distinct seasons we've been in. And the one that frustrated me the most was winter, because how come this is happening? What am I not doing to manage this and fix this problem? And now I realize it was just winter. So it happens in relationships, it happens in organizations, and it happens in your own soul, in your own heart. And so today I'm beginning a four-part sermon series called The Seasons of Life. And my objective is very straightforward and massive at the same time. I want to try to change your mind about how you look at life. I want to try to change your mind so that you don't look at life as something that you manage to try to maintain status quo and create more successes and reduce failures as if that's even possible. But rather realize that your life is a series of seasons. And that the best thing you can do is not fight the changing of seasons, is not to resist change, but to embrace it and to realize that every season of the soul has a purpose for producing a healthy tree which produces mature fruit. And so in every part of this series, this four-part series, I'm going to focus on one season. And I want to talk about what the characteristics are of each season of the soul. And we're going to talk about what activities are appropriate as well as inappropriate for that particular season. And then also talk about what is God's purpose for us in each of those seasons. So that the seasons are not something we're afraid of, they're not something that we fight, but rather something that we embrace. And so I thought, you know what, let's get the hardest one out of the way first. Let's start today by talking about winter. Nobody likes winter. We all dread it, so we'll get that one out of the way first. And then the next ones will be, the more enjoyable seasons. Ecclesiastes 12, which is not what we started with. We started in Ecclesiastes 3, but Ecclesiastes 12 is a description of a winter of the soul, a winter of the heart. If you have time this afternoon, I'd encourage you to read it. We're not going to read all of it this morning. But I do want to focus on the very first verse of Ecclesiastes 12. It says, "Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come, and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them. No pleasure. The winter of the soul and the winter of life, here he's talking about old age, actually, which is the winter of life. But the winter of life and the winter of the soul have one thing in common. There's no pleasure. Things, when you're in the winter of the soul, the things that you once craved, the things that you once looked forward to, they just kind of taste like cardboard. You want to spit them out. They're tasteless. There's no enjoyment in them. The food, the friendships, the activities that you once really enjoyed, now they're just kind of empty. They're just blah. And when you feel that, you know that you're in a winter of the soul. Just feels kind of blah, kind of meaningless or purposeless. Which actually leads to the next thing I want to say, because in verse 8 of Ecclesiastes 12, he says, meaningless, meaningless, everything is meaningless. Which is exactly what your heart says when you're in the wintertime. It's meaningless. This is all meaningless stuff. You know, the trips that you once really enjoyed, if you take them when you're in the winter of the soul, it's dull. You don't enjoy it. It feels meaningless. The books that you once enjoyed, they're just kind of now drudgery when you try to pick it up and read it. And everything in life is just kind of robbed of ambition. You know, you go from purpose-filled to purposeless. And you just can't get the energy to do much of anything. I'm currently reading a book called The Power of a Whisper. And I saw it the other day in a bookstore. And as soon as I saw it, I just felt like it was calling to me. So I went and I got it and I picked it up and I started reading it. And I'm just, it's every word it feels like is just speaking to me of where I am right now. And so I'm really enjoying this book. And the other night as I was driving home from work, I was thinking about how much I enjoy this book. And it dawned on me that 4 months ago, I had come across this book when I was in a winter time. I picked it up and I tried to read it and I thought, oh, ugh. And I put it down. Now, what changed in 4 months? Did the writer go back and rewrite the book so that it's suddenly fascinating and meaningful? No. No, when I tried to read it during the winter of the soul, it was meaningless. And now that it's not wintertime, all of a sudden it's meaningful. And that's what happens in winter. Things don't speak to you. As one person said, the eyes of the heart in winter see very little light. If you want another psalm about what winter of the soul is like, read Psalm 88. And if you don't want to get depressed, don't read Psalm 88, okay? If you're not in wintertime and you don't want to go there, don't read it. I heard someone say one time that one of the reasons that we read is to try to be understood. In other words, we try to find an author whose words speak who we are. And we gravitate toward that. And so if you're in the winter of a soul, if your soul is in wintertime, Psalm 88 will speak right to you. And I just want to read one verse from Psalm 88. It's actually the very last verse. It says, you have taken my companions and loved ones from me. The darkness is my closest friend. The darkness is my closest friend. He feels abandonment. He feels rejection. He feels isolation. He feels winter. He feels friendless, even if he's in a crowd of people. He feels unknown and unloved. He says, darkness is my only friend, which is a very dark statement to make. And actually, this is the very last verse of this psalm, which means he doesn't even give a remedy. He's miserable. He doesn't offer a solution. And, you know, it takes me back to what we talked about last week in terms of Good Friday. Good Friday being the darkest day in human history, the day Jesus was crucified. The darkest day in human history. And Luke, at the end of his gospel, he tells the story of two men who were disciples of Jesus who, following this very dark day, were in just the darkest time in their life. They were making a journey from Jerusalem to Emmaus, which was a trip of about 7 miles. And as they are walking in darkness, they're joined by a third traveler who they had never met before. They didn't know who he was. And he didn't reveal who he was to them. But they walked with this other guy. And as they were walking in darkness, it says their hearts began to become strangely warmed. And then at the end of the journey, the stranger reveals himself to these two disciples in darkness. It was Jesus. It was the resurrected Jesus who had been traveling with them in this very dark journey they were on. Now, it's interesting that Jesus did not disclose himself to these disciples as soon as he met them. Why not? Why not say, "It's me, I'm back from the dead. You guys, it's okay, it's all good. You don't have to be down anymore." Why didn't he do that? Why did he walk with them and talk with them and just go with them through this time but didn't reveal himself? I think that's often how God is with us during these winter times. He's there, but we don't know it. He doesn't reveal himself to us. He waits until the end of the journey, and then he reveals himself. And my guess is that this is because winter is a time for pruning. It's a time for things to be cut back, to be cut away. And if we knew that it was Jesus right there and he was fully revealed to us, that the pruning wouldn't happen. And so he's with us, but we don't know it. We don't feel it. And what he's doing during these times is he's cutting away certain things in our hearts so that when spring comes, we can actually bear good fruit or begin the process of bearing good fruit. Because any time we're being pruned, more is being taken away than is being given to us. It's a loss. It's not a gain. But the purpose of pruning is not deprivation, but rather cultivation. But the cultivation is going to come later. And so he's sculpting us to bear fruit down the road. Our family has a gardener. We really like our gardener. His name is Caesar. And not too long ago, Caesar did some pruning in our yard. And he cut a couple bushes way, way back. In fact, we said, we think Caesar may have gone a little overboard this time. Just really mutilated a couple bushes. Cut them way back. I mean, they looked ugly. Now, why did Caesar mutilate our bushes? Is it because Caesar is a plantophobe? He hates plants and he just wants to destroy them every chance he gets? No. Actually, Caesar is a man of faith. Caesar walks by faith. Not by sight, but by faith. If he walked by sight, he wouldn't make our bushes look so ugly. But he's a man of faith. Caesar has faith that if he cuts the bushes back now, that the season's going to change, and down the road, the bush is actually going to get better and fuller and look even better down the road than it does right now. But he does that in faith. We walk by faith, not by sight. Faith, in fact, is the opposite of sight. And see, wintertime is really the ultimate cultivation of biblical faith. It's when things are happening, but we can't see any of it happening. It's all being done in trust and in hope and in belief that it's going to bring something better down the road. It's the season in which we nurture what is hoped for, but what is not seen. And that's where abiding faith comes from. From going through the pruning and the cutting away and the deprivation and learning that when the season change, it's going to get better. Let me ask you, if you're going through a tough time, And you want to go to somebody who will pray with you and be with you, without even thinking about it, who are you most likely going to go to? Someone who you know who's been through a winter of the soul and come out on the other side. Because they're the ones who are going to be most authentic. They're not going to give you flimsy answers. They're not people who are likely to be, you know, tossed this way and that by the changing of emotions and the changing of popular opinion. They've been through it, and they have the faith that you're looking for, and that's what you'll gravitate toward. You know, for the last couple of years, I've been in somewhat of a winter in my own soul. Because of health and a few other things thrown in there. You know, it just hasn't been a really fun, productive time. So there's these health issues and there's some other things. And, you know, none of them are life-threatening. I mean, some of you face life-threatening things. I'm not where you are. Thank God. But they're just consistently debilitating. And as a result, I haven't felt the joy of summer. I haven't felt the abundance of fall. Just felt the kind of the cold limits of winter. And, you know, some of it's from my own doing, and some of it's just because that's the season of life. But as winter is drawing to a close, at least I think it's drawing to a close, I'm getting a message from God, and it's one word. Prune. That's what you do at the end of winter, is you prune. God is saying, prune. He's saying, you got to cut back all the different branches. You got to limit yourself. Well, that's scary. It doesn't feel good. You know, I don't want Caesar to come along and cut off all my limbs. You don't look good like that, and I don't want God to do that to me either. Because I don't know what's going to look like on the other side. But that's what he's saying to me. Dennis, you have to prune. Not because I want to make you miserable, not because I'm playing games with you, but if you don't prune now, there won't be mature growth later on. And so I'm stepping into a time of pruning in faith. And really the faith is that the gardener is a good gardener. That he cares. And he has good plans down the road. One last thing. According to Psalm 88, the winter of the heart feels like death. He says in verses 4 and 5 of Psalm 88. He says, I am counted among those who go down to the pit. I am like a man without strength. I am set apart with the dead, like the slain who lie in the grave, whom you remember no more, who are cut off from your care. Winter's awful because everything appears dead. The trees have no leaves, there's no flowers, there's no buds, there's no fruit. And in the winter of your heart, it feels closed permanently. There's never going to be any more growth. Your dreams are dead. You can't imagine them budding and coming back to life. It's just going to be this way perpetually. But those of us who follow a risen Christ, who follow a risen Savior, know that's not true, even though it feels that way. We're not left hopeless. In fact, the Apostle Paul, he went through his own winter of the heart. And I want to read how he describes it to you in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 8 and 9. He says, we do not want you to be uninformed, brothers, about the hardships we suffered in the province of Asia. We are under great pressure, far beyond our ability to endure, so that we despaired even of life. Indeed, in our hearts, we felt the sentence of death. That is a winter of the soul, death. They despaired of life and they felt like it was a sentence of death in their hearts. But listen to what he says next. But this happened that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead. He has delivered us from such a deadly peril, and he will deliver us. On him we have set our hope that he will continue to deliver us. What's a purpose of the winter of the heart? It's to make us heavenly minded. It's to break our addiction to the ways and the solutions of this world. You know, the human mind has its way of fixing problems. And the winters of the soul come along and say, those don't work. You got to look somewhere else. And so we look to God. And we find that in him there is life that we can't find anywhere else. In him there is a solution that can't be found anywhere else on this earth. See, we are not made in such a way that we are ever fully at home in this world. We are not to hate this world. We are not to try to run from this world. But we know that in this world, we're never fully, fully at home. The writer of Ecclesiastes says it this way. He says, God has placed eternity in our hearts. Eternity in our hearts. Our hearts know that we were made for something more than just what this world has to offer. And because of that, we long for resurrection. We long for the life to come back into us, the life that is eternal. And it is a longing that this world cannot satisfy. And those of us who follow a risen Savior know that this is true. Because in Jesus, death does not get the last word. Winter is not the last season. And there is life, and there is a spring that will follow. Hallelujah. And I don't relish winter time, and I don't wish winter time on any of you. But it comes. and it has a purpose. And during winter time, there are really just two disciplines: to wait on God, to wait with hope, and to be prepared to prune if he calls us to prune. That's it. But winter has a purpose. And so we go through winter in hope that spring will come. And next time we'll talk about what to do when spring does come.